Welcome one and all to another episode of The Damage Report with me, John Idarola, and excitingly today, Ida Rodriguez. Ida, how's it going?
It's going well. How are you?
I'm great. Everything's great. The country is great. The Supreme Court is great. There's just so much that's great. What is great though is I mentioned this on the pre-show this week. Okay, on Monday we had Francesca Fiorentini. On Tuesday, Alonzo Bowden. And today, Ida Rodriguez.
Nice. Those are my
best progressive comedians. What a great week.
Nice. Those are my friends.
I know. It's good. It's good to spend time with your friends during dark times, which has been the last few years or decades, depending, and probably the rest of our lives, which might be a few years or decades, depending. So keep your friends close. Anyway, and your enemies honestly far away, because I can't deal with the enemies, okay? So with that though, we have a lot that we are going to be talking about through the course of this show. So I want to thank all of you, regardless of what platform you're on, for joining us. If you're on a platform where you're watching live, hit the like button. Go ahead, do that. Might send out some notifications, let people join us. Speaking of people joining us, YouTube just added the functionality that you can gift memberships. So you just gift it, it gives it to a random person watching the show, which is such a nice thing to do. And we already had someone do that right off the bat. Lazy Peon, the Stone Eagle Dragon, gifted 20 memberships to the channel, giving those people a highlighted name and a badge, and they can use the emojis and everything. How nice is that? And so great, very nice of you to be a great ambassador dragon in that way. So through the course of this show, we're gonna be talking about some pretty interesting ideas. How do we grapple with geriatric oligarchy? We're gonna be diving into that in just a little bit, talking about some candidates, death threats, what the right is gonna come for after they destroy Roe v. Wade. We've got some really exciting stuff there and a whole bunch of stuff besides. So I'm gonna need you to buckle up and get ready for this. And with all that said, Ida, are you ready to talk about some news?
I am ready, let's go.
Okay, let's do it, let's jump into this.
Airline pilots are forced to retire age 65. Federal law enforcement officers, 57. Judges here in South Carolina, 72.
What?
Have you ever noticed that politicians hardly ever retire? Our country and our state are being run by a geriatric oligarchy. People who stay in office way past their prime.
That is an ad by Joe Cunningham, who is the Democratic nominee for governor in South Carolina, who has identified that yes, we do have a lot of older politicians, but he doesn't just want to identify, he wants to do something about it. Listen to this.
That's why it's time to put term limits and age limits on politicians. It'll bring new blood and new ideas to the table. That's why I want to legalize marijuana and sports betting, and then use that money to give our teachers a raise and fix our roads. Let's fight climate change and put people to work while doing it. And how about this? Let's move towards eliminating the state income tax to keep more money in your pocket.
Okay, so we included that last bit there because I don't know a lot about Joe Cunningham, but like, okay, so you want to legalize marijuana? That's good, that's good. And then getting rid of the state income tax. Okay, so things get a little bit complicated there, but we're setting aside that for now. Let's talk about this, Ida. He wants not only term limits, which lots of politicians before they get into office advocate for that. I don't know him, maybe he still will in 20 years. Usually once they get into elected office, they stop talking about that. That's not too crazy though, talking about term limits, but talking about age limits is not something generally that you hear a lot about, particularly from major party candidates for governor. What do you think about that?
You know, even though it falls into the category of ageism, I see his point, because there's a commonality in the thinking of people that fall into this certain demographic and how they've been affecting our country, and they bring their old ways and they don't want to make change. And then a lot of those older white men that he's talking about are sitting like fat rats collecting these checks from these corporations and not wanting to make changes because they don't want to let go of their generational wealth. They want to ensure that their children and their children's children continue to have what they have while the other people struggle. And in South Carolina in particular, where the education system is so lacking and the cost of living versus the income, the average income in that place, the struggle that is real in a place called South Carolina. I'm really impressed to hear someone. It's very refreshing to hear someone with a Southern draw talk about climate change in a way that is affirming that it's real and saying that they want to legalize marijuana. And so, you know, I think that we've gotten such into this culture of the takedown. It's going to take all hands on deck. And someone that's leaning towards progress is always better than the people who are trying to prevent it at all costs.
I agree with you. Yeah, I need to look more into him. When he goes into getting rid of the state income tax, that worries me a little bit, because that, I don't know how that necessarily advances those other goals or whatever. But it is interesting, and he is coming with fresh ideas. I will give my take on whether it makes sense to have these age limits in one sec. First, I do want to lay out the data. So does he have a point? Do we have really, I mean, we know anecdotally, we have a lot of old elected officials, but here's a breakdown of the different chambers of commerce. Half of the Senate is 65 years or older, 32% of the House is, and you can see the breakdown for the different parties, 54% of Senate Republicans are that old. And it isn't just that they're old, let's be clear, they're getting older. I mean, we all are in a very real sense, we're all aging, we're all hurtling towards being decrepit and out of touch and everything, but them especially. If you look at this, here's a chart of the average age of the Senate and the House over time. So the average age of the Senate is 63.9, the House is 58.3. Those are each about 4.5 years older on average than they were just 2 decades ago. And I actually, I don't have it in fun chart form, but I looked at the data for as far back as 20 years prior to that. So 1980 to 1982, the average age of US senators was 47. That's like a kind of young senator now, 47, now it's 64 and a half. That is a big difference, and it is changing. And now with all that said, all that laid out, no, I don't support it. Maybe term limits, I could kind of see that. But the age limit is the issue. Like everything that Ida said, I agree with you, Ida. I do think that there is a predisposition towards getting out of touch, not being willing to rethink things. I agree with all of that. But the issue is that almost like when I critique the Uvalde response being too much about the cops rather than the guns, because I don't think the cops at the end of the day are like better cops aren't the solution to gun violence. Making it all about the age is a thing. It does matter for some, but compared to money, compared to ideology, like, under his rules, Bernie Sanders wouldn't be able to run again, but Kyrsten Sinema would be totally fine. Like that's the thing that we don't need. Should we have younger representation? Totally, we should. But what we need isn't necessarily younger representation. It's better representation that's not been bought by the big interests. And So what do you think?
No, I said I agree. I think balance is the utmost necessity for anything that's going to function properly. And I think that, of course, you know, Bernie Sanders is in that age range where of the people that he's trying to eliminate. And I don't agree with, you know, setting an age limit, but I do believe that there needs to be some sort of balancing of the floor, because we need to have all types of people in the body of, you know, government that represents us all, and they don't. And the majority of them are, you know, Mitch McConnell looking people that tweet ridiculous things and are completely out of touch with the regular average American person that has to go to work every day, because they've been getting money for so long. They're not even, you know, you talk about celebrities being disconnected. Those are the celebrities of government. Those people are completely disconnected from the reality of those of us who have to show up and work every day. And those people have had great educations. They live in the best neighborhoods. They have the best healthcare. They have the best lives. And then they have an active push against education and healthcare for everybody else. It's just not them. So a lot of those people need to be eliminated. I don't know if that's the smartest way to get rid of those people. because then we get rid of the people who are on the side of good for the Americans. But I do think that there needs to be some sort of balance, because it's just disgusting. It's egregious, and it's tiresome. The American people are tired. I can say that from talking to anybody, no matter what side of the political aisle they're on. Everybody is tired.
I agree. I feel it. Look at my face right now. Look at this. I mean, I'm not saying I looked great a couple of years ago or anything, but it was better than this. Come on.
Do our Lord Jesus Christ have a mental illness? Because he said he's the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. To me, those are three different personalities. So, you know, we're not so much different than he is. But what we got to do is quit putting others down and try to build them up.
So that is Herschel Walker, a Republican nominee for Senate in Georgia, who, according to the polls, is a very good chance of being the next senator. And there he is talking about his dissociative identity disorder, or DID, which he's previously talked about. In fact, he wrote about it in his 2008 memoir, Breaking Free. He says that he has 12 alternate personalities, or alters, including the warrior who plays football, the sentry who avoids emotional attachments, and the thrill seeker who plays Russian roulette with a loaded gun. And there he is responding to critiques of his mental capacity to be a senator. Now, I'm not sure that the allusion to Jesus makes a ton of sense. I'm an atheist, to be clear, but like my gut says that if I was a Christian, I wouldn't like that so much. Like a guy who, look, let's be clear, has been through the ringer of the NFL, has experienced some of the natural physical consequences of that many, many players have, that was covered up for far too long and isn't generally respected. Like culturally, we don't deal with these sorts of problems. We do need to have a conversation about this, but I don't know, like trying to explain away the fact that you like to play Russian roulette and you, like, let's, as we're gonna get into, threaten other people with guns on a semi-regular basis as being you, like being like Jesus, I don't think that that's a great explanation. And to be clear, I alluded to the threatening. So let's get to that. 4 years after his diagnosis of DID, Walker's ex-wife, who now uses the name Grossman, sought a protective order against the prospective senator. In a 2008 interview with ABC News, she said that while she and Walker were married, he repeatedly held a gun to her head and threatened to blow her brains out. Walker has not denied the allegations, but has said he doesn't remember the instances, which I think is worse, not better. Like if you're doing stuff like this and then blacking out and having no idea that you did it, that is not reassuring to me, not when it's a private citizen, and certainly not when it's someone who might be like voting on like going to war and treaties and choosing Supreme Court nominees and things like that. But Ida, what do you think about this?
I have two things to say about this. First of all, Herschel Walker is a great example of how poor our education system is in this country. And the push against education and information under the guise that it is elitism. And that has been something that they've been running with for the last few years, trying to shame people for being intelligent or having information. You saw it through COVID. You see it constantly from the last administration. It's been happening a lot. Questioning the audacity of President Obama for being intelligent, people mocking him for it. All of a sudden, a black man became the president of the United States, and being smart became something that was, oh, now you think you're better than us. All of that is rooted in racism. But the other thing I want to say is, unfortunately for people like Herschel Walker, Silk and Diamond, whatever their names are, those people who are, you know, I don't want to insult them because I don't get anything out of doing the things that they do. But those people who you can see have a deficiency in basic information and knowledge, probably didn't have the best education, are always being patted on the head by these racist, bigoted white people who love them because they are repeating the talking points that are oppressive to them themselves. Because the people who, like I said earlier, the people who are always pushing against education and calling out things about the intellectual elites, look at their resume and find out where they went to college and see how they have a degree,
yep,
a post-secondary education. But they want you to be ignorant because all they want you for is to step and fetch. And that is what's so sad about this. This man who is, this is what, this is that grab them by the thing phenomenon that we are watching unfold before our very own eyes. They are going to enable this man to get into office because he is going to do the dirty work of keeping his own people down. And it is so insulting, insulting to see them celebrate him knowing that he is an abuser. He has a mental illness. It's unbelievable how low the Republican Party has gone. Not that the Democratic Party is that much higher above them, but how low they've gone to enable to just further their agenda, that they will compromise the integrity of Congress just for the sake of winning. That's how bad politicians are and how sad the American people are who are so busy struggling to stay afloat in this moment that they can't even further their education or get the information to know that this is bad for them. And that makes me so sad.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right. I mean, like, all of this, as you say, goes deeper than just one candidate in so many different ways. That said, there's also this candidate, and he can't be a senator. Like, that's crazy. We have to have, I'm not saying we have to have the expectations for leaders that I would have. That's never gonna happen. But we should have some expectation. Like, and again, this isn't about him having DID or whatever.
No.
This is about what he does and says. Like the stuff that we've already told you, or like, I'm gonna jump ahead of graphic 8. Walker said in the ABC interview that we alluded to that he has his alters under control. But 4 years later in 2012, a Texas woman filed a police report accusing him of threatening to blow her head off and then kill himself if she broke up with him. Micah Dean said she was Walker's longtime girlfriend, according to the police report from January 2012. No charges were filed against Walker, who has denied the claims. So that's good. He doesn't deny the other claims that he threatened to kill a woman that he was with a gun, but he denies these ones. Except that he also says that he frequently doesn't remember whether he threatened people with guns or not. So how exactly do you deny this? You apparently frequently threaten people with guns and have no idea that you did it, according to you. I don't believe that. I don't think that's true whatsoever. But that's the story you would have us believe. So it's hard for me to assume that you didn't threaten this person as well. And I gotta say, in 2022, our country has descended to depths it never should have. But I think there should be a limit on how many partners you've threatened to blow the head off of for you to still be able to become a senator. I don't know if it should be one or two or whatever, but we got to, as a society, set the line somewhere. And I feel like Herschel Walker has gone past it. Anyway, with that said, we're going to take our first break. And when we come back, we're going to jump into even more threats of violence, this time at a Democrat, Eric Swalwell. We'll have that for you after this. Okay, everyone, it's about to get wild. There's going to be some choice but censored language in this clip, but still, you know, bear in mind if you got the kiddos, maybe earmuffs. And with that, let's jump into this.
Hey, you little. You still banging the Chinese spy bang bang and stinking up apple with your farts, you little. We're coming to your house this weekend, gonna get you and them little mutants. Their little mutant offspring of yours, we're gonna get you.
So that was a obviously threatening phone call, a voice message that was left for Representative Eric Swalwell, threatening to kill his children, referred to by that deranged individual as mutants, and tying him to a conspiracy theory that the right has all accepted uncritically that he was routinely having sex with a Chinese spy or something. So why did he suddenly get that message a year or two after that conspiracy theory was like widely in the news? Well, it's not that difficult to figure it out, actually. It starts with a tweet that Eric Swalwell sent out saying, "Today I gave a tour in the Capitol and was stopped by a father with his young boy. The father yelled at me, 'Hey, Swalwell,' and then told his son, 'That's Swalwell, he's trouble, he doesn't back Trump.' I kept walking and felt sad for the boy. he's being raised in a cult family. I don't know that individual family. I don't know if that's true. The movement is definitely a cult. Can't attest to whether it affects the parenting, but that wasn't a great interaction to have. Anyway, you know who responded to that tweet from Eric Swalwell? Marjorie Greene, who tweeted, "No way that happened," which she might be right. I don't know. But she goes on to say, "Because we all know good Trump supporting fathers would say, that's the Democrat who had sex with a Chinese spy." Again, referring to this conspiracy theory, which, like every other conspiracy theory that you or I could ever come up with, Marjorie Greene is going to accept readily and integrate wholly into her worldview, requiring no evidence whatsoever. You cannot come up with something crazy enough that she will not believe it. But she put that out there, and we know what her following is like. And so, what do you know? Day later, he's got messages on his thing, and he actually tweeted about that, saying, "Have a listen." He linked it on his Twitter, saying, "Marjorie loves to play the victim, but she's an inciter of violence. Her constant attacks, even after the FBI said I was never suspected of wrongdoing, led to threatening calls like this. This caller from today threatened to kill my three children." And to be clear, he's accurate there. According to a 2020 report in Axios, Christine Fang, who they refer to as Fang Fang, targeted up-and-coming politicians in the Bay Area and the US, including Swalwell. She reportedly took part in fundraising activity for Swalwell's 2014 re-election campaign and recommended an intern for his office. Federal investigators said they alerted Swalwell to their concerns back in 2015. That's 7 years ago. And he immediately cut all ties with Fang. He was not accused of any wrongdoing or of passing on any classified intelligence. While Fang did allegedly have sexual relationships with at least two Midwestern mayors, Swalwell was never even accused of having sex with her, let alone have it proved that it actually happened. But 7 years later, why would a complete lack of evidence stop Marjorie Greene from spreading a conspiracy theory that directly and predictably leads to threats of death against his family? Ida, what do you think?
You know, racism and bigotry is a good old American value. And as people like that woman and all of the women who are of her ilk continue to take their stand because they are racist and they're bigots. And I'll say it, even though you're not supposed to call people racist unless you have evidence. Well, anytime you have to tweet something about someone and include what their ethnic makeup is in order to, you know, berate them, it's a little racist if you ask me. And she is continuously, you know, like people who say they're not racist, I always ask the classic question, but is racism a deal breaker for you? Because there are so many people who say they don't actively practice racism or bigotry, but they don't stop it when they see it happen. That's and so true. There's just this whole growing nation of people that do this who are now irritated with black and brown people always blah, 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 talking about the stuff that happens to them because they don't have to experience it. So it's just like, you know, here we go listening to this woman who is, I wonder how many people have been really sick or lost their lives listening to these people as a result of believing everything that they say when the pandemic happened. You know, like I feel sorry for the people who don't realize that the greatest threat to their well-being is these people. The people who you follow, the people who are so hooked up with the KKK and the white supremacist groups that are leaving threats about murdering children like they would do openly back in the day where there were no consequences. They're fighting to get back to that. And if you pay attention to the pendulum swung one way, that's what they kept saying, it's gonna swing back. It never swung that way. It was all a bunch of rhetoric. How many black people have been killed since George Floyd? When has police brutality stopped? We just saw videos of people getting murdered over and over again. What are the living conditions of black and brown people in this country? And you know, you're talking about Asian people who sometimes are identified as the model minority. Well, here it is where you see how model minority they are when it comes to the true racist minds. They still look down on you too. So I hope none of us are buying this Herschel Walker, Asian people, anybody who gets patted on the head by these white people who would like to see us fetching their meals. Don't buy it. This is all rooted in that racism and that foolishness and that bigotry. And you know what? I feel sorry for America. I feel sorry for the idea that this country was supposed to be even though it is based on, you know, I mean, I don't know. What can you expect of a country that started off in a way that they did by stealing, raping, pillaging? I mean, are we surprised that it has evolved to this? No, it's just been who it's always been. And those of us who really love this place got to work from the inside out to really change it.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
No chance, and that's so, so difficult.
Yeah,
you're right about so much, but also when you pointed out about the pendulum swing, man, you know what they love, the people in power? Fake pendulums.
Yes.
Like that, they're literally saying that the reason the right is targeting the trans community is because the pendulum swinging back, they went too radical. What are you talking about? Where was the acceptance? Where was the, there's not, no, they want it to move to the right. It's never moved to the left. Nothing ever has in this country. But they have to invent it. They're doing it inside of Joe Biden's presidency too. The reason that people are turning against Joe Biden is he went too left for like a year. That's what it is, went too left. There's nothing they love more than cloaking mediocre, designed to fail centrism as you know, the pendulum swinging back.
And it's our job to defend the Second Amendment.
Yeah. Well, I understand that we don't have guns in the UK, that is true, but we don't have mass shootings either. Children aren't scared to go to school.
You have mass stabbings, lady. You have all kinds of murder.
Nothing,
and you've got
like
laws
same,
against
nothing
that.
Nothing like the same rates.
Well, you can go back to your country and worry about your no guns.
That's very kind.
We like ours here.
Americans love to say that they want representatives like them, and I think they got it there with Marjorie Greene. She made a claim that the UK, sure, they don't have mass shootings, but they have just as much murder. And the reporter immediately replied, that's not true, and we're gonna give you the facts. And when it was demonstrated to her that the point she'd made wasn't true, her immediate fallback was, go back to your country. Marjorie Greene might be standing next to a podium. She might technically be a representative, but she is no different from every Karen that we call out week after week on the show. She's the same person. But here are the actual figures. The US homicide rate is 4 times higher than the UK. According to Pew Research, nearly 80% of US murders in 2020 involved a firearm. Now, what are the stakes of that difference? Well, in the past few years, England, Scotland, and Wales combined have seen around 30 gun deaths a year. In the US, in 2020 alone, it was 19,384. Now, we don't have time to go through all the math. I will acknowledge we have a larger population that does not account for it, not at all. And do mass stabbings happen? Yes, sometimes they do. If you had to face a mass shooting or a mass stabbing, which would you prefer? No reasonable person does. If mass stabbings were as good as mass shootings from the point of view of the killer, why go to all the trouble and expense of buying AR-15s? There's knives everywhere, just pick one up. It's as deadly as any tactical nuke, just use that. These points make no sense, which is why we can't be surprised that they're coming from Marjorie Greene. What do you think, Haida?
You know, like I said earlier, she is always speaking, she's always repeating the talking points of the racist people in this country who are, if you don't like it here, go back to your country. Well, why don't you go back to your country? Because this is not your land. If you ask the First Nations people, I know they regret being peaceful when you came here. Why don't you go back to your country, the place of your origin, and go take all that ignorance and foolishness and violence there? I guarantee you they won't welcome you there because it's probably somewhere in Europe that's far more progressive than here.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
100%.
You can't go 100%. Home because they don't want you. But the other thing that we want to say is, you know, it's funny, when I was growing up, my family used to say, they used to watch Fat Albert, and they used to say, oh, he's like school on Saturday, no class. Look at that representation. Look at the way that woman, who's considered a representative of not just the region that she's from, but in that setting, the United States of America. And look at the way that she's talking. She is speaking directly to the people who believe that kind of stuff and speak that way. And that is why she feels emboldened, because she knows that the people that rock with her are the ones that call and threaten people to kill their children and call them mutants. So it's just unbelievable to me. And the reality of it is that she comes from a place where she's probably never had to face violence, never had to face struggle, never had to deal with the real stuff that the people who are supporting her have to feel, have to deal with. And it's just interesting to hear. They say Chicago, but I'll never see you in the South Side of Chicago. You say all of that stuff and you play tough and you talk about a gun, but it's, I guarantee you, it's all an empty wagon makes a lot of noise. And that is exactly what she is. And it is so sad that they've given her a microphone, because I know the rest of the world laughs at us. I know they do, because I've heard it.
Yeah, I'm just from that clip alone, I'm sure they're going to. I would like to add to, I loved a couple of the sayings you added there. The empty wagon makes a lot of noise. I think an empty skull makes even more, actually. And she demonstrates that every day. Think about that. A reporter from a country that doesn't have this crisis that we have every couple of days says, hey, if you were to change a simple policy and be a little bit more like us, you wouldn't have kids being blown apart with military grade weaponry. And she says, go back to your country. We like our laws. Mm-hmm. And she's saying that because she doesn't care. Like, she doesn't care if kids are being blown apart on a routine basis. She doesn't. By the way, she was calling out that the press conference, she was calling out all the Republican senators who supported that bipartisan gun bill, that incredibly weak gun bill that is not going to solve all the problems. Even that was too radical for her. She was calling them out, saying the Republican voters don't support them anymore, even though polling shows that Republican voters are actually perfectly fine with red flag laws and comprehensive background checks and all of that. She has no idea what the voters actually want, because she doesn't care about what the voters actually want. She just doesn't like the tough questions, and her go-to is the same again as any Karen: go back to your country.
Can I say one thing too, just also that, because the conversation about guns has been hijacked in this extreme way that there's never a nuanced conversation about it. I would have had more respect for her if she said, first of all respect to those fallen lives, that the many fallen lives in our country, and in particular these children and these black people in Buffalo that have just been murdered, with all that, just have some type of sensitivity towards those human beings, yeah, those lost souls. And then, you know, the conversation is always they're trying to take our guns, when we know good and well, no, many of people who don't believe that anybody should have guns. But many people are just advocating for getting rid of this artillery, this war arms that regular citizens are walking around with, are armed with, and getting in the wrong hands. Nobody's trying to take your 380 away from you. Nobody's trying to take your Derringer away from you. And mind you, I had this argument with somebody the other day. Those of you who have these weapons, who think you're gonna take on the US government, who spends more money on these arms than they do on your education, your healthcare, your well-being, you are so sadly mistaken. If you saw that man in Texas, the one that was blown up upstate California, you don't stand a chance. So what is it who is it that you think you're gonna take out? Normal, innocent citizens that don't have a defense against you, because you know you can't go up against the government and 100%. The military.
Yeah, indisputable. No, they, like, I spend one night a week with my friends pretending that we're running around in a fantasy world of elves and dwarves and stuff like that. And their fantasies are crazier. They just are. Like, honestly, I might call myself a sorcerer once a week. They're demonstrably crazier. Anyway, with that said, we're gonna go to our second break of the hour. When we come back though, they're not only coming for your reproductive rights. They're not only coming to destroy Roe v. Wade. They're coming for the women too. Wait until you see the idea that right wingers are passing around now. We'll have that for you after this. Okay, let's jump into it. I've been talking about on the show for some time the seeming disconnect between what right wingers say they believe about abortion and what they actually want to do about it. Because of course they say that abortion is murder. It's as simple as that. If you get an abortion, if you exercise the reproductive rights that you've had for longer than you've been alive, for most of you, you are committing an act of murder. But you'll note that most of them don't say that they want to do anything to prosecute the women. Now, of course, I don't want anything to happen. I think the state should leave you alone. You can make your own decisions. But they say that it's murder, and they only really want to come for the doctors. perhaps up until now, there is a shift potentially coming. Take a look at this article. This was posted on a web called The Stream. Two conservative authors wrote it. It was, by the way, tweeted out by the director of the Heritage Foundation, one of the intellectual leaders of the right. The article says, once the law protects unborn kids, should we seek legal penalties for women who abort them? And they consider the complicated ethical dilemmas here. They say the position most, they seem to agree with me, saying the position most of us pro-lifers take seems somewhat inconsistent and logically unsatisfying. We want to see legal penalties for doctors, nurses, and others who perform abortions after the legal limit. In some states, that will rightly be conception because, of course, they want to completely eliminate it. But we loudly deny claims by pro-choicers that we would punish women who sought such abortions. And that seems inconsistent, even incoherent. Now, to be clear, there are some who don't or very vocally want there to be penalties for the women. Texas GOP lawmaker back last year was attempting to make abortion punishable by the death penalty for the women. And others in other states in the past couple of months have been saying that too. They want the state to execute you to prove how bad abortion is because it's murder or whatever. Now, we have a Texas lawmaker filed a bill that would abolish and criminalize abortions. Basically, that's what I'm alluding to. So they go on to say, we recognize the fact that most women who seek abortions are in some sense victims, but then exaggerate it for political purposes. We essentially pretend that all women who abort their child are hapless 13-year-olds impregnated by adults who were driven to the clinic sobbing in tears and shoved through its halls like a calf for the slaughter. Establishing legal penalties for women brings its own moral problems. It threatens the huge majority of genuinely victimized post-abortive women with punishment they don't deserve. And of course, they acknowledge it's political suicide. A stance which, if insisted on, would ensure legal infanticide in 50 states forever. So they're trying to set themselves apart from other conservatives by saying they're just being moral cowards. We're going to take this seriously. But even in their own thing, they acknowledge that, well, we don't want to do anything that would be politically too unpopular. But what do they think would be popular? If they're not going to execute the women, then are they going to do nothing? No. They say we ought to treat women who illegally abort the way we treat failed suicides. Women won't go to prison, but they will face the real deterrent of a short but mandatory psychiatric custody and mandated counseling. They think that the women should be institutionalized for exercising their reproductive rights. Sure, but mandated. We'll lock them up. We'll talk to them a little bit. Clearly, there was something wrong with them. You all have been treating them as if they're children. That's offensive. We're going to treat them like they're out of their mind for exercising these rights, Ida. And that, look, maybe that's just two conservative authors, but the director of the Heritage Foundation, he tweeted it out saying it's a thoughtful proposal. What do you think?
Of course it is. I would go out with Liz Winstead and help abortion patients as they have to walk through crowds of people yelling out at them and threatening them or trying to recruit them and putting up these fake clinics to try to, you know, brainwash them or whatever. And what I see constantly is white older men out there with pictures of, you know, whatever it is that they say an abortion is with a Bible. You know, very, very seldom do I see women who've had abortions that are like, let me tell you what happened to me. This is why you shouldn't do it. It's always people who've never been in the situation. And I know people get irritated when you bring up Gilead and The Handmaid's Tale. And those of us who read the book, who understand what the book really was, and to say that this is exactly what is happening is not, but I hate those people because those people are the people who have nothing better to do but try to prove that they're smarter than others. But if you look at that book that is not supposedly fiction, the people who are always oppressed in that book during this time, of course, women, but the people of color, people who are gay, they're called gender traitors. Like you see the oppression of the people who are always at the bottom. And so when we think about abortion and we talk about it, no, let's never forget that this is not a moral issue. This is a class issue because the people who can't afford to have abortions, senators who get their mistresses pregnant and wealthy people, men who can fly in a private jet their person to go get an abortion somewhere where it is legal are not going to ever suffer as a result of this law and this legislation. This has always been to target people of color, poor people, and keep them in their place. The people who you complain about for being on welfare and having multiple children are the people you don't want to have contraception and you want to penalize when they want to have an abortion. So if you think about it logically, if you just sit down for a minute and take your feelings out of it, it's poor people, people of color who think you're gonna burn in hell by the people who are actually hell. They are hell. These are the hell people that are telling you you're gonna burn in hell if you do this. Just know that they have no problems doing it. They don't want you to do it because they need you to fill the quotas to fulfill the work that they're trying to do to keep you down. This ain't never been about morality. Never.
Yeah. Oh, you're dead right. It's just it's disgusting to see it and how it just keeps getting worse. Okay, we gotta quickly jump into our last story. It is good news though, so let's do that. Maybe we'll lighten things up just a little bit at the end.
We should arm the good guys.
Whether it's in Denny's or in a classroom.
The only thing that stops a bad guy with a gun.
There's a good guy with a gun.
Good guy with a gun.
One good guy with a gun.
There's a good guy with a gun.
Sounds like a foolproof plan.
Yeah, so that's their plan. When there's gun violence, when there's mass shootings in particular, the solution obviously is yet more guns. That'll solve it. When the guns start firing, when the bullets start flying, all you need is a person of good moral character to stop the shooter. In practice, does that work? No, in a lot of different ways, that's not actually how it works. And I wanna dive into the results from a study, the Advanced Law Enforcement Rapid Response Training Center at Texas State University. They looked into this, they broke down a ton of different events. And here's what they found, 249 attacks, these active shooting incidents ended before the police arrived, 184 after they arrived. And when it breaks down, generally, when it ends before the police arrive, the person just leaves the scene. It's very quick, okay? 72 out of 250, they committed suicide. These are people who expect that they are going to die going into it. Again, bear that in mind when people talk about like legal remedies for this. Many of these people know that they're not living through this. There were some where good Samaritans got involved and stopped it. 42 times someone subdued the attacker. Just 22 times, less than 1/10 of those where it was stopped before the cops got there was with a gun. 7 of those were a security guard, 3 an off-duty officer, 12 were citizens. Now you might say, well, we could get that number up if more people were constantly carrying guns. The issue is that, yes, that number might go up. You know what number also might go up though? The number of good Samaritans who get shot by cops. Because when one person starts shooting and then another person shoots at them, and cops arrive on the scene, they don't have a lot of time to do like a character analysis, really talk through what people's motivations are, and that sometimes ends poorly. Last year, cops arrived at a scene, shot the Good Samaritan. There was actually just a story in the last week of the exact same thing happening. So when we put more guns out there, when we encourage more people to solve violence with yet more violence, we're condemning some of them to be gunned down. The good guys with the gun will be shot by cops. That's what they're pushing for. Ida, what do you think about that?
Especially if they're people of color, as we've seen historically in this country, people who've been killed trying to do the right thing without having a gun. But you know, this encouragement, this call to, you know, Death Wish, Charles Bronson, vigilantism, that, because that's what it is. It's a call to vigilantism that is going to be costly for the American people. It's also putting the onus on US citizens for protection. And when we are paying taxes for people to do that for us. But in addition, this fascination with guns, and usually the people who you see you saw that video, I guarantee you, none of those people who keep talking about these guns actually know how to use a gun properly. They're just telling you that because they don't care about you.
Yeah.
And over again, F this Republican, Democrat foolishness. The US citizen, the average person in America, those people don't care about any of y'all. They only want your dollars so you can buy their merchandise, buy their books, go see them speak, and keep their kids going to the Ivy League schools and living in the good neighborhoods and going to the good doctors. You keep getting caught up in this foolishness with these people who don't give a damn about you. And it is so sad to hear them say that, trying to arm teachers with updated books, dictionaries, arm them with the supplies that they need. I was at the dollar store buying supplies, and a teacher was in there buying the stuff that she needed for her classroom with her own money because they wouldn't give it to her. And she's a good teacher. We are just in the upside down, as they say in Stranger Things. This is sad that they are continuously trying to get American citizens killed. That is a call to action to get more US citizens killed. That's all it is. And you said it right. It's going to get a lot of people killed. And then imagine a regular citizen shooting one of these young people with mental illness and shooting in the head. A traumatic experience for them all. This ain't a Wild Wild West movie, guys. That they really need to wake up. I've been around gun violence my whole life. It is not all that it's cut out to be. And in a moment where you are confronted with someone who is rageful and ignorant or hurt and angry, you don't know what you're going to do, even if you have a gun. Stop trying to get the American people killed.
I would love that change. Yeah, certainly not a solution to the problem we're facing. Now, that is unfortunately all the time we have for our first hour. Thank you, everyone who's listening on the podcast or linear platforms. For those of you on other platforms, we have a lot more to talk about, so don't go anywhere. We'll be back after this. Kyle Cushing says, the US government is founded on ageism. You need to be 25, 30, 35 for US representative, Senate, and president. A 20-year-old is much better than Dianne Feinstein. So Kyle's pointing out that it's sort of reverse ageism.
Yeah,
that's interesting. May Money says in a super chat, Ida, you are refreshing and your comment earlier made me feel seen. I've been kind of depressed recently, can't find a job, struggling with bills, family deaths, etc. You reminded me I'm not the only one. Love.
That makes me, there's so many stories like that. And we think about the unhoused and how much it's gone on. And you know, John, I just want people to know, I see you, I hear you, I know I am you. I was living in Best Westerns and living in a car with my two kids. And I know that the American people are struggling while all these people are sitting around, you know, talking about Kim Kardashian and who she's dating and when she gets ice cream. And in turn, the government, you know, going to have arguments with reporters about knives and guns. And the people in this country are struggling. So I just want you to know that you are not alone. And even though I'm an entertainer, I'm also living check to check. People just don't understand how hard it is for everybody right now. And I wouldn't dare put myself in the position of someone who has to go to a 9-to-5 job, but I know that it's hard. So,
yeah. You
know, good energy sending your way. Hold on, just hold on and take care of your mental health.
Singularity sent in a YouTube comment that just says, this guest is awesome. That's all it says. Thank you for watching. This guest is awesome, actually. That said, Ida, I hear you've got some stuff coming up.
Yes, I will be at the Inland Empire, at the Ontario Improv this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I have 6 shows, and I am excited about doing it because I get a lot of love out there, and I'm bringing some really good other comedians with me. Throwing the rope back, opening doors, and we just want to have a good time. We want to bring some joy to Ontario and surrounding areas. We just want to bring a good time. It's a really hard time for Americans right now. So we're on this joy tour to bring joy to people everywhere we go.
Nice, I love it. And if you're watching and you've never been to one of Ida's shows, I've been lucky enough to be to multiple of them. It's awesome. If you're in the area, you should definitely go. And let me just say, by the way, I came across, I think it was one of your tweets yesterday. And I thought, like, I'm very thankful in a lot of different ways for my job. There was no guarantee that I would ever end up in this field at all, let alone here. It's just total, like, everything's random, but it worked. And I'm grateful for a lot of different reasons. But then I was thinking, like, I would have never met you. We'd have never talked if I hadn't been working here. So that's just another reason why, like, thank God my life went in the direction it did. That we get to interact, I get to learn from you. It's awesome. So thank you.
Same. I learned from you too. And I just got to say that the day I went to this restaurant and I encountered this woman who happened to be your wife. And I was like, wow, they are a reflection of each other. Like the beauty that comes from the inside of John comes from the inside of her as well. And I can see that they're a great compliment to each other. So I would have met you. I'm so thankful for the I've learned so much from you guys as well. And the opportunity to just express my voice and speak up for people who don't ever have the mic. So thank you.
I appreciate that.
New Moon JLP for 15 says, woot. So good to see John and Ida together. That's the exact way I felt when she connected to Skype. I thought, woot.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.